This is Nightly Business Report with Sue Herrera and Bill Griffin.
Streaming profits. Netflix saw its earnings grow, but subscriber growth missed expectations just as the company gets ready to face a lot more competition.
Taking a break, consumers pulled back on spending in September, and investors wonder if the main pillar of growth is becoming shaky.
House hunters, the pickings are slim for affordable homes, and some say the problem could get worse. Those stories and much more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Wednesday, October 16th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. A critical quarter for Netflix, which for a very long time dominated the streaming video industry. Tonight, Netflix reported better than expected earnings. Revenue was just about in line with expectations, but the company did not add as many subscribers as it thought it would. And in just a few weeks, it will face some new competition from Apple and Disney. But investors chose to focus on the company's profits. Julia Boorstin starts us off tonight with more on Netflix quarter.
Netflix shares soaring despite lower-than-expected guidance for the fourth quarter. Investors appear reassured by better-than-expected earnings and international growth in the third quarter. Also potentially reassured by frank commentary by CEO Reed Hastings in his letter to shareholders about competition. This is ahead of Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus launching next month. Hastings saying that Netflix has been preparing for this new wave of competition for a long time, saying, quote, "The launch of these new services will be noisy. There may be some modest headwinds to our near-term growth, and we have tried to factor that into our guidance. In the long term, though, we expect we'll continue to grow nicely, given the strength of our service and the large market opportunity." Now the question is whether Netflix can indeed add the 7.6 million subscribers that it forecasts it will add in the coming quarter, even with rivals Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus's launch. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Julia Boorstin in Los Angeles.
Let's turn now to Tuna Amobi to talk more about Netflix and the coming streaming wars. Tuna's with CFRA Research. Good to see you again. Welcome back.
Thanks, Bill. Good afternoon.
Is Netflix, in your view, ready for the added competition?
Well, you know, I think they've been doing everything possibly that they can to get ready for the intensified competition. We've seen them ratchet up their content spending and starting to skew those from licensed to what original, and that trend will continue. Next year, we expect that they could go from 15 billion cash content potentially to up to 17 billion or more. So you see that kind of that pathway is really preparing them for quite some time. My sense is that they're gonna, you know, obviously be one of the potential winners here.
What about the subscriber growth, which came in a little bit short, certainly? Still healthy, but short of what Wall Street was looking for. Does that concern you at all that it's coming at this juncture, right before all that competition?
You know, that's right, Sue. I think that's an important observation at this point in Netflix's life cycle. We're seeing kind of a bifurcation of growth where the U.S., on the one hand, is showing signs of maturity. On the other hand, I think there's still a lot of potential upside on the international market, of which we think local language production is going to be one of the catalysts for international growth. Also, markets like India, where they're kind of shifting towards mobile first. So all in all, I think there's really a lot to be said about the upside internationally. In the U.S., you know, I think it's inevitable that when you look at what's happening, that there's definitely going to be some kind of peaking of that growth for Netflix sooner than later.
Quickly, next month it's Apple Plus and Disney Plus. Early next year it's Peacock, which is owned by our company Comcast that owns us, and then HBO Max. Who provides the greatest competition, do you think, for Netflix?
You know, I'd have to say it's, you know, Disney, you know, for what I think are obvious reasons here. You know, I think the content pipeline that Disney brings to the table with their Disney Plus, frankly, it's you know, it's groundbreaking and potentially, you know, second to none. So you throw in all the other companies you mentioned, everyone is kind of pulling out all the stops, ratcheting up their spending, and don't forget also pulling up their most popular shows off of Netflix, which again trying to give themselves a good head start in what is really becoming an intensifying landscape.
Tuna Amobi with CFRA Research. Again, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Bill.
IBM also reported earnings late today. Big Blue's revenue disappointed investors, but the profits were slightly better than expected, thanks to growth in its high-margin cloud computing business. That business has been a focus for the CEO, who has tried to lower IBM's dependence on its traditional hardware products. But it wasn't enough for investors, who sent the stock lower in initial after-hours trading. Deirdre Bosa has more.
IBM is still struggling to revitalize its business. The computing giant has made big bets in artificial intelligence and cloud computing, next-generation technologies, but the company has seen more than five straight quarters of declining revenue. This quarter, its first since it closed its deal with Red Hat, its biggest acquisition ever. IBM saw its cloud revenue grow 14%, a significant improvement from earlier this year. However, that rate still trailing cloud players Amazon and Microsoft. CFO James Kavanaugh telling CNBC that they're driving growth in key value areas and is pleased so far with the Red Hat deal. For Nightly Business Report, Deirdre Boza, San Francisco.
As for the market itself, it was a remarkably flat day on Wall Street. In spite of all the economic reports and earnings news, the Dow never strayed very far from the unchanged level, as all the major averages still remain within striking distance of their all-time highs. At the close, the industrial average was down just 22 points, still above 27,000. The Nasdaq lost 24. The S&P was down almost 6.
The president of the Chicago Fed said no more interest rate cuts are needed this year. Charles Evans thinks the economy and policy are both, quote, in a good place now. The market, however, is anticipating another rate cut at its meeting later this month. Evans is a voting member of the Federal Open Market Committee.
Two new economic reports, though, could help policymakers decide whether another interest rate cut is needed. First, there was the Fed's own survey of the economy called the Beige Book, which showed some softness in some sectors due to trade tensions. Then there was a surprising decline in retail sales in September. Steve Leisman ties it all together for us.
The Federal Reserve's Beige Book reported just slight to modest growth throughout the country in September and early October. That was a bit of a downgrade from the prior survey. The collection of economic reports from the Fed's 12 district banks found trade tensions and slower global growth weighing on the U.S. economy. Many businesses reduced their outlook for growth in the next 6 to 12 months. The New York Fed said growth was subdued, and Boston found signs of slowing more widespread. Kansas City and Chicago reported only slight increases for growth. While manufacturers lowered their headcounts amid soft orders, overall employment saw slight gains. Those gains were tempered, however, by worker shortages in many places and industries. The report comes as Fed officials weigh whether to cut interest rates again at its meeting later this month. Markets are pricing in a third quarter point rate cut, but Fed officials, they seem more divided. After two rate cuts, some want to see more negative economic news before providing even more stimulus to the economy. They got some of that today in the September retail sales report, which sharply disappointed to the downside. The 0.3% decline in September compared with expectations for a 0.3% increase. Auto, furniture, and department store sales all declined sharply. Apparel, one of the few sectors to see gains. In any event, economists now believe the recently completed third quarter grew at just 1.5%, which is about half the pace of growth registered in the first quarter. The question is whether there will be additional slowing from here. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Steve Leisman in Washington.
Brett Ryan joins us now to talk more about what today's retail sales report may be telling us about consumer spending. He is the senior U.S. economist at Deutsche Bank. Welcome. Nice to have you here, Brett.
Great. Thank you for having me, Sarah.
How do you interpret this report? Yesterday, the bank said the consumer is strong, is borrowing, is spending on credit cards. And today we get this report. Isn't it an outlier or not?
Well, I think bank earnings are a little bit backward looking in the sense that they're looking at, you know, at the previous 3 months of the year. And while 70% of the decline in retail sales this month were auto related, ex-autos were also down. And so the weakness was a little bit broad based. And that would be less concerning, you know, we can say, and that was the first time since February, by the way. It'd be less concerning if we had a clear catalyst. But this is also occurring amidst slowing job growth, slowing hours worked, and wages that are beginning to move sideways, wage growth that's kind of slowing. So, you know, in otherwise strong data, that'd be fine. but we see other signs of weakness in the data, and that's what's concerning about this report.
So this is, it's not just about one report. You feel like there is the beginning of a slowdown here for the consumer, which has been the main growth engine for the economy, right?
That's correct. We think the consumer is going to get a little bit more cautious. As I noted, hours worked have been slowing. The pace of hiring, you're seeing more evidence of slowing there. Firms' business sentiment has been declining since the beginning of the year, and the risk is that the slowing of business sentiment spills over into consumer sentiment, and consumers become more cautious. Today is a possible sign that we're beginning to see that.
You are forecasting three more rate cuts by the Fed. Is the Fed going to be able to keep the economy from slowing down too much or possibly even going into recession?
Well, it remains to be seen how much monetary policy is needed to sort of address these downside risks. Do we see the trade war resolution shortly, and that boosts business sentiment and companies begin to invest for growth again? Mm-hmm. Or do companies remain cautious during an election year in which there's domestic policy uncertainty in addition to trade policy uncertainty?
Well, there will be a lot to talk about. Thanks so much, Brett.
Brett Great, Ryan, thank you for having
with
me.
Deutsche Bank.
Time to take a look at some of today's upgrades and downgrades. A couple to tell you about tonight. Johnson & Johnson was upgraded to neutral from underweight at Atlantic Equities, with the analysts citing the growth potential across the company's three main business franchises. Price target now on J&J, $129. And separately, there are reports tonight that J&J has offered to pay about $4 billion to settle lawsuits accusing the company of contributing to the opioid crisis. Stock was up more than 1.5% today to 153.17. Adobe was downgraded today to neutral from buy at Citi. The analyst cited the potential for limited margin expansion in that business. Price target $313. Shares fell more than 2% today to 272.70.
Still ahead, the big bet the casino industry is making on the future of the Vegas Strip.
General Motors and the UAW have confirmed that the two sides have reached a proposed tentative contract agreement that could end the month-long strike. Leadership and the rank and file still need to vote on the deal, and they've called a meeting for tomorrow. Details of the deal not known yet, but workers had been asking for a bigger share of GM's profits and for more job security, among other things. 48,000 workers walked off the job on September 15th. It's estimated that the strike has cost the automaker roughly $2 billion. Shares of GM rose 1% today.
Home builder confidence rose to its highest level in nearly 2 years. Economists credit lower mortgage rates and a steady job market. The industry expects sales and demand to grow. This report marks the fourth straight month of increases.
And the housing market has been unseasonably brisk this fall, thanks to those lower mortgage rates. But buyers are coming up against one of the big barriers to entry, which could get even worse in the coming months. Diana Olick explains.
I actually have a listing going live in about 2 weeks.
Anyone out shopping for a home today already knows the pickings are slim, and they will likely get even slimmer. The supply of homes for sale hit a record low 2 years ago, but then mortgage rates started to rise and buyers pulled back. It was a slow spring this year, and that helped build the amount of homes for sale. But then mortgage rates dropped pretty sharply over the summer, and demand came back in a big way, eating away at supplies again.
It's got to be very frustrating for home buyers right now who see low mortgage interest rates, but no kind of easy available supply of housing.
National housing inventory fell 2.5% annually in September, a sharper decline than in August, according to Realtor.com. And it's worst on the low end. The supply of homes priced below $200,000 is 10% smaller than a year ago. Demand also surged in the move-up market. The supply of homes for sale priced between $200,000 and $750,000, which make up 60% of the market, flatlined in September after 18 months of strong inventory growth. Supply is now expected to decline in the months ahead. And the nation's home builders are not helping the situation much either. Single-family housing starts have been rising very slowly and mostly in the move-up and luxury segments of the market due to higher costs for construction.
We've faced what has been called a perfect storm of supply-side challenges. There's been an ongoing labor shortage. We lack the necessary land and lots to build homes. We've had building material cost concerns. And then probably the most important factor has been higher regulatory costs since the Great Recession.
Low supply coupled with strong demand is a recipe for higher home prices, and prices are already pretty hot. If rates should move higher, that could take the heat off. But if they stay even close to where they are now, we could be in for one of the tightest and most competitive spring markets in history. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Washington.
Bank of America posts solid results, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The bank topped analysts' expectations, driven by strong consumer banking, which is B of A's biggest business, and an increase in investment banking, which helped offset interest rate cuts. Shares of Bank of America rose about 1.5% to 30.17. Bank of New York Mellon posted better than expected profits by cutting costs to help offset softness in its investment management unit and lower interest rates. But the bank missed street revenue expectations for the fifth time in the last eight quarters. Bank of New York was up a fraction to 44.44. Fiat Chrysler reportedly may be hit with about an $80 million civil penalty for not meeting fuel economy requirements in 2017. Reuters says the automaker received a notice from government regulators and has 2 months to respond. Fiat also paid about $77 million for the same violation in its 2016 models. But shares rose today more than 1% to $13.47.
American Eagle said today it plans to hire nearly 10,000 seasonal workers this year, but that is less than half the number it hired last year. The retailer, though, will be holding a hiring event this weekend at stores around the country. Shares rose a fraction today to $15 and a penny. Alexion Pharmaceuticals is buying Aculon Pharma for $930 million. That deal helps Alexion expand its pipeline of drugs to treat certain rare blood disorders. Aculon shares skyrocketed nearly 72% today to $6.27, while Alexion shares fell about 5% to $99.51. And after the bell tonight, CSX beat profit expectations. While revenue was in line with forecasts, growth in the railroad's merchandise segment helped offset declines in its coal and intermodal shipment units. Shares initially rose in after-hours trading tonight, but they did close the regular session down a fraction at 69 even.
MGM Resorts is selling one of its signature properties on the Las Vegas Strip. The Bellagio will soon be owned by Blackstone, which is paying more than $4 billion for it. And the selling of land to raise cash is becoming one of the biggest trends in the casino industry. Contessa Brewer is in Vegas for us tonight.
The Bellagio, with its dancing fountains, is one of the must-see sights in Las Vegas. But it's about to have a new owner, Blackstone Real Estate Income Trust, or a REIT. MGM Resorts is selling the casino resort and raising billions in cash.
We're going to reduce our financial leverage. So all the money we receive from Blackstone here at Bellagio will go to reduce our financial leverage. So by the end of 2020, our balance sheet will be vastly stronger than even it is today.
MGM will continue to operate the Bellagio and pay rent to Blackstone, so visitors shouldn't see a difference. For the company, the difference is being an operating company versus a property company.
The capital markets have been very clear over the past 5 years, 10 years, that the separation of real estate from operations, branded operations, is capturing the highest value in stock prices. And that message has come across loud and clear.
MGM's deployed the strategy with more than a dozen other properties, among them Mandalay Bay and New York, New York in Las Vegas, and the Borgata in Atlantic City. And other companies are increasingly looking to entice investors, maximizing their cash by selling the property under the casinos to REITs. Caesars did it when it emerged from bankruptcy, selling many of its properties to the REIT Vici. Penn National Gaming currently operates more casinos nationwide than any other company, but many of the properties themselves belong to the REIT Gaming and Leisure Properties. In the volatile casino industry, cash on hand is a safety net worth having.
Are you anticipating another recession?
I'm anticipating that we're late in an economic cycle, and I want to prepare for the unforeseen, and I want to be stronger as each incremental day goes by.
MGM is also selling Circus Circus outright, a famous destination on the Vegas Strip, for more than 50 years. Treasure Island owner Phil Ruffin is paying $825 million. And Murren says it's highly likely he'll sell the MGM brand. Bottom line, it's a long-term, high-stakes bet on renting versus owning. In Las Vegas, Contessa Brewer, Nightly Business Report.
And coming up, Volvo rolls out an all-electric car, but are buyers ready for a plug-in SUV? There is yet another front in the trade war with China, one that is not often talked about. It's rare earth metals, which China produces a lot of and which American business needs a lot of. Here's Brian Sullivan.
Rare earths, 17 minerals you may barely remember from high school chemistry or geology. They've got funny sounding names like praseodymium, dysprosium, neodymium, and europium. They look like little more than sand, but they are perhaps the most strategically important minerals in the world right now. If you want a cell phone, computer screen, electric car, or a rechargeable battery, you need these minerals. They're also critical in the production of magnets, necessary for building renewable energy projects. Now, the United States used to be a world leader, but 20 years ago, China figured out how important rare earths would be and boosted supply. Prices crashed. Soon, it was no longer profitable to operate mines in the United States. The last major rare earth company in North America, Molycorp, filed for bankruptcy 4 years ago. We now rely on China for more than 90% of rare earth production or processing, creating a big problem. And not just a problem for consumer technology, but for national security. Many of these elements are critical components in defense systems. So critical, in fact, the Trump administration put out a report highlighting their importance, saying, quote, "The assured supply of these critical minerals and the resilience of their supply chains are essential to the United States' economic security and national defense." The long-term concern is that China will end up controlling so much rare earth mining and refining that it will be able to dictate price and availability around the world. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Brian Sullivan.
Controversial and inappropriate comments made by Ken Fisher of Fisher Investments are costing him. Philadelphia's Board of Pensions terminated its business relationship with Fisher, which amounts to about $54 million. This follows a similar decision by Michigan's retirement system, which pulled $600 million of its pension fund from the wealth management company. Fidelity says it is reviewing its relationship with the money manager, as is the Florida State Board of Administration. And the Boston mayor has asked that city's retirement board to end its relationship with Fisher Investments. The comments were made at a recent financial conference. In a memo to employees obtained by Reuters, Fisher apologized.
Volvo is the latest automaker now to roll out an all-electric vehicle, and it's all part of a wave of plug-in models that the auto industry plans to put on the road over the next 5 years. But is there enough demand for vehicles powered by electricity in a world with relatively low gasoline prices? Phil Lebeau has our story.
This is the latest model in a slew of electric vehicles that could dramatically change what we buy and drive in the future. The XC40 is Volvo's first all-electric model, going on sale next year.
An electric car is not just environmental friendly, it also has some other really big advantages. You have a super response, it's quiet, and I think one of the most important things is you can fuel it at home.
Volvo says that by 2025, it's hoping for EVs to make up half of its global sales. an ambitious goal, since electric vehicles make up just 2% of all the models sold in the world, and an even lower percentage in the U.S. Still, automakers are rolling out more and more EVs. So how tough will it be for Volvo to convince buyers to buy a plug-in SUV?
I think Volvo will be facing a lot of the same challenges that every automaker faces when they go into the EV marketplace. There's just not a lot of demand there, and there's still a lot of concern about things like range and price and battery condition and how long those last.
The other issue slowing down EV sales, cheap gas. In fact, prices have been so low for so long, there's little pain at the pump. As a result, most car buyers rarely think twice about buying a gas-powered vehicle. But Volvo CEO is undeterred.
Of course, the fuel price is always a certain headwind, but it goes up and down. So I think we have to act, of course, long term. But you should also remember these other advantages with the car, an electric car, quiet, a really good response, and that you can fuel it at home.
While electric powertrains are coming to every type of vehicle, including pickup trucks,
the reality is it may be several years until plug-in models take off in large numbers. And even then, automakers like Volvo will have their work cut out to make sure their EV stands out from the others expected to be in showrooms. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Chicago.
And before we go, here's another look at the day's final numbers from Wall Street. The Dow was down 22 points, still just above the 27,000 level. The Nasdaq lost 24, and the S&P was down almost 6. And that is Nightly Business Report tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us.
I'm Bill Griffith. Have a great evening. See you tomorrow.